You're listening to Better Than Fiction with your hosts, D.L. Nelson and Scott Sackett.
All right, welcome back to Better Than Fiction, your pop culture podcast. As always, I'll be your host, D.L. Nelson, joined by my other host,
Scott Sackett.
And this will be episode 515. Woo! That's right, 515 episodes, still cooking. Tonight, after we did our, last week we did our best of 2023, tonight we're going to get back in the same old format that you know and love. We're going to talk some cool stuff.
Woo!
And maybe an abbreviated episode, I don't know. I've only got one thing really to talk about. You've got one thing. What are you going to talk about?
Can we go first?
Go first.
Okay, I will go first. I am continuing my voyage through the X-Men Epic Collection. That's what it is.
Volume
5.
Okay, all right.
Now, I talked about this. This is one of my, this is my number one thing of the year. And again, like I said on that episode, it's my number one because these are stories that I love. What I'm currently reading is not stuff I read as a kid, though. In fact, today I'm going to talk about issue 103, and on the cover it says Death Siege. Now, I want to remind you all what's happened is Sean Cassidy, a.k.a. Banshee, has discovered that I think his uncle died or something. Somehow, he's gone to Ireland. I think he's inherited a castle.
Mm-hmm.
So all the X-Men have gone over there because they need a vacation.
Mm-hmm.
And so they go over there, and they're confronted by Juggernaut and, what's that guy's name? Black Tom Cassidy. And so they fought him last week, and Nightcrawler, at one point, I think he got vanished or something happened to Nightcrawler. It's been a while since I've talked about this. Anyway, so this issue 103, on the cover it has Nightcrawler, Banshee, and Storm fighting Black Tom and Banshee. Juggernaut. Juggernaut is throwing a big hunk of the castle at somebody. Black Tom's shooting a beam at Storm. And it says Death Siege. And the name of the issue inside is called The Fall of the Tower. And we see that Nightcrawler is being carried by leprechauns. Now, I got to admit, when I read this in the Epic Edition, or not the Epic Edition, in the Essential Edition, this is the first time I read this episode, or this issue, and I was less than overwhelmed.
In the black and white.
Well, just with the story, because I thought, what's with the leprechauns? I didn't care for the leprechauns. Anyway, so they're carrying Nightcrawler. He comes to...
But they're like in Ireland, right?
Yeah, they're in Ireland. Okay. But
home of the leprechauns.
Yeah, but I don't like leprechauns in my superhero comic.
Mm.
It's like chocolate in my peanut butter.
Okay.
Anyway, so they're, you know, so Nightcrawler comes to and he's like, Wolverine, all, he's like, hey, what's going on? It's like, oh, am I dreaming? What are y'all? You're small with pointy ears like me. That's impossible. Like, leprechauns. Wait till I tell my friends. This is what he says. Wait till I tell my friends. My God, my friends, the battle, what's happened to them? And one of the leprechauns tells them, they've been captured by Black Tom and Juggernaut. Who, it's Eamon O'Donnell, my friend, the Senchal O'Cassidy Keep. I don't know what Senchal is. I don't know if it's the keeper. I don't know if he's the keeper or if he's a leprechaun or what he is. You can't tell how big he is. He looks like he's significantly shorter, though, than Nightcrawler. The man who kept the family safe from harm, you see, your friends are in deadly danger. It's true, but so are mine. And there's kind of a flashback about how Juggernaut and Banshee kind of came to the castle, and they took all the leprechauns prisoner. And then he says it's not just for himself alone either. He took orders from a tall man in red armor and a horned helmet. Tried to get a warning out through Lawyer Flannery, but he misunderstood, thinking that Tom was after this castle, Banshee's inheritance. Never realized what Tom wanted was Banshee's life, all your lives. And anyway, so Nightcrawler's talking, And Nightcrawler realizes, this is another thing I don't like about this issue. What's funny is, well, Nightcrawler, he sticks his hand in the shadow and he turns invisible. And they're like telling him, when we were carrying you, we saw this, which we saw that last episode. So if he gets in the shadow, all you can see is his eyes. Now, I've never liked that. Never liked the idea that he turns invisible. When John Byrne was on the comic, he kind of blended in with the shadows.
Mm-hmm.
But they literally made him turn invisible. And one of John Byrne's complaints about what Cockrum was doing on the book was Nightcrawler was Dave Cockrum's favorite character. And so he kind of pushed him. And Chris Claremont let him push him more and more to the front, to where he kind of became the star, you know, of the show. Anyway, so the Leprechaun's going to lead Nightcrawler to where they're at. They're looking through some bars, and he sees, and basically, Banshee, Colossus, Wolverine, and Storm are all trapped, and Juggernaut and Black Tom are gloating. you know, and apparently Juggernaut is unhappy, and Black Tom tells him, calm down. What does it matter if Nightcrawler escape? Alone he can do no harm, and the other X-Men's powers are neutralized. They're helpless. And so he talks about, I've got my neutron... What's he call this? My neutron tangler glove. He's wearing kind of a glove, which reminds me of the demon claw that Baron Stroker wore in an episode of, or an issue of Captain America. Anyway, so he's got some kind of glove, and he's kind of rubbing like Storm's cheek with it, and it's like cracking with electricity, I guess... She's like grimacing, and so Black Tom is like, I'm after the professor, and so Nightcrawler, who they're spying on, is like, okay, that's what he wants, is the professor. And he goes, I got an idea. If this doesn't work, send my body to Xavier's school for gifted youngsters. And he teleports, bam. And then we see Juggernaut going, what's that stink? It smells like fire and brimstone. Tom, he's here. Xavier's here. And we see Xavier right there. We kind of see a little bit of smoke coming off of him. And so Juggernaut chases after him. And all of a sudden, like, Xavier jumps up and dodges him. And he, like, plows into some instruments. And Xavier tells him, you're getting slow in your old age. And so then he goes, you're laughing at me. And he goes, of course I'm laughing at you. You know, they're brothers, so he's taunting him, Juggernaut and Xavier. And so he's like jumping over him.
Brothers or cousins?
No, the brothers. Oh, so like half brothers.
Yeah, and it's Black Tom and
Banshee are cousins.
Yeah, okay, keep going.
Anyway, so he's jumping, he's like dodging him, and Black Tom's like, wait, something's wrong here. Xavier's a cripple. He's like, that's enough out of you. And he kind of does one of those kicks where you hold yourself up, and in both feet he kicks Black Tom.
Mm.
He says, consider this partial payment for what you did to Nightcrawler. And so Xavier is exhibiting acrobatic abilities we never knew he had. And so then he jumps up, and then he's sticking to the wall, and they're like, what are you doing? And he goes, and Black Tom, Kane goes, this isn't my stepbrother at all. No matter what it looks like, it's got to be that close two-toed blue skin freak. So he figures out the way he's acting as Nightcrawler. And so he punches into the wall, and he kind of knocks a hole through the castle, which he's tearing up Banshee's castle, which is kind of a bummer. And Storm is kind of catatonic because she's claustrophobic. So when he blows a hole in, she's like, I can see the sky. And she's like, and they're like, what's she doing? All of a sudden, she like is free. She creates this big wind. She frees herself, she frees Banshee, she frees Colossus and Wolverine. And and she flies out of the castle, and they kind of fly out of the castle and they fall. And Wolverine's like, oh my gosh, the broad's gone flaky. And Nightcrawler...
That play wouldn't be allowed.
Colossus says she's very happy, but do not ever call her a broad again, Shorty.
Well, so he's never called her again. That never came out of his mouth again after that.
Probably not. Maybe not. Certainly not in the modern.
No.
Not in the modern X-Men. And so Colossus, Wolverine has these boots on his feet. Colossus is trying to break them. And Nightcrawler comes, or Nightcrawler. Storm comes over and is like, I can take care of him. And like, what, you? What do you think you can do? And all of a sudden she unlocks him. She's like, in my time, I was the best lock pick in all Cairo. Mm-hmm. And he goes, but we'll talk about that later after we rescued our friends. So Banshee's still in there. So they're carrying Banshee. And they're kind of like, hey, they're at the top of the castle. They're going, oh, okay, we're going to drop him. It's like, you know, you have 5 minutes to surrender before we throw him off the castle. So Storm flies up there. And Wolverine's like, you dumb broad, come back down here. Uh-oh. Yeah, you go charging up there all alone, you'll just get yourself killed for crying out loud. It's like, Wolverine, he like grabs him and says, I told you, I never call Storm a broad again, and I meant it. And he throws him up in the castle.
Oh, the first like, fastball?
Yeah! Yeah.
First fastball special
ever, I guess. Yeah. Maybe. Yeah. And so, it's like, he's a pity there's no one left to throw me. I'm afraid I'll have to climb the wall the hard way. And he's like, crunk, crunk, you know, just digging in with his armored fingers. So Storm's up there. Luckily, the castle has some laser guns, so they're shooting at her.
Oh, luckily.
Unluckily for them. And Juggernaut is like throwing, there's a big rock, and he's like, what does it take to kill you, mutant? And so he throws a rock and hits Colossus, and he's staggered. So Storm's firing lightning bolts. They're kind of working their way up there. Well, Wolverine's up there, and he's like looking for him, you know, because he got through up there. And he's like, Colossus, you threw me so flaming hard, I landed on the wrong side of the flaming castle. How expect me to get on the fight for crying out? He goes, I think I can help you there, Mr. Logan. That's the leprechaun. That's my leprechaun voice. It's like, what the blazes are you? I know my name. And he's like, he's basically like, now you come with me? And he's like, I don't believe in leprechauns. He goes, whatever, you coming with me or not? And so he runs off. Meanwhile, Juggernaut's throwing rocks. They're shooting lasers at Storm. Banshee is still bound up. He's got an iron collar over his voice box or over his mouth so he can't scream. And then out of nowhere, like Nightcrawler snaps the rope that he's tied up with. Mm. So Banshee reaches up and pulls the little whatever it is that's keeping him from using his power. So he sonic screams Juggernaut. It falls through the floor. The X-Men are going to confront him. Banshee's running after Black Tom. Black Tom is swinging an axe at him. He got an axe off the wall, I guess. And he's like, oh, no, you don't, cousin. I may be old, but I'm not stupid. So he's fighting him. And he gets a sword, and they're kind of like an old school, like, sword fight, Black Tom and Banshee. Which I like the way his hair's drawn in that panel. It's kind of whipping in the wind. There's a storm going on. Black Tom smacks the sword that Banshee has and breaks it, and then he's got the axe. He's getting ready to do him in. And he's kind of got him on the wall, and he's like, ah, getting ready to administer the coup de grace. Banshee kind of kicks at him. He's like, ah, what are you doing, madman? Your sister's both over the ledge. He's like, no, Tom. I only wish it didn't have to end like this. And he throws him off the castle. Hmm. And Juggernaut's like, no, Tom, get out of my way, you clowns. Hold on, Tom, I'm coming. And Juggernaut jumps after him. I never thought Juggernaut was really bright.
I didn't know they felt that way about each other.
Apparently they do. I don't know if it's both of them or just Juggernaut.
And well, they're a team.
They're a tag team. So Juggernaut goes in the water. Storm gets the weather, this crazy weather, under control. So the sun, but they're searching. There's no trace of the bodies. For a moment, it seems the battle is over and all is once more well with the world. For the moment, we see someone, a shadowy character, watching screens. Now, is there one screen of the X-Men looking over the castle wall? There's one screen. It says, I will brook no more failures. Is that understood? Princess Nermani is due to reach Earth in a matter of weeks. Whatever happens, she must not contact the X-Men. The third screen has Magneto on it. Hmm. And whoever's watching these says, she will not, my liege. You have my word on that. I now have an ally worthy of the name, the X-Men's oldest, deadliest foe. Xavier and her students will be dead before they even realize they're under attack. Next issue. The gentleman's name is Magneto. Mm. Nuff said. Mm-hmm. That'll be issue 104 of X-Men. Wow. Now I want to go to the theme song.
You're like a little over halfway through, it looks like.
Probably. Yeah, and you know, a lot of this, I'm about at the point where it's time to switch to the other book because those are a lot of those are like Iron Man or Marvel or Iron Fist or Marvel team up stories. Mm. They kind of tie in, but I won't discuss those.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've brought a book also, and this is no surprise to you who the artist writer is. It's Junji Ito, and I brought a Viz collection of his stories. He's kind of got his own
imprint,
sort of. It's Viz, but he's got his own little thing on the spine. It's Junji Ito's story collection. This particular volume is called Frankenstein, and on the back it says Junji Ito meets Mary Shelley, and it says the master of horror manga blends all his skills into bringing the anguish and solitary monster and the fowler beast who created him to life with a brilliantly detailed, and I never can pronounce this word, but it's like Kirikoso? What is that word?
I think it's Kurosuko. It's an Italian word. It means like black and white.
Detailed black and white for which he is known.
I've never heard it pronounced. So yeah. I don't know how it's pronounced.
So the first, I would say, even though the book's called Frankenstein, the first 2/3 of the book? Third of the book, it looks like. First third of the book is, first almost 200 pages is Frankenstein. But then it goes into the second third, you might say, of the book, even though it's not third page wise, is it says also include our six tales of Ashikiri, a high school student who lives in a decaying mansion connected to a haunted parallel world, uncanny doppelgangers, unfortunate murdered friends, and a whole lot more are in store for him. And then the bonus, the last third of the book, which is not a third page number wise, but just the third concept, I guess, is there's a bonus section of the book that deals with the Ito family dog called Non Non. Non Non Ito, it's the adorable Maltese. And so what he's done is this particular book has, like I said, about 186 pages, 185 pages of Frankenstein, and then another good 200 pages of, or maybe more, of the stories of what I call him, Ashikiri. And then the last 20 pages or so, 10 pages maybe, are stories of Non Non, the Maltese that's the Ito family dog. Now, I've never read Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. I've seen some of the movies. I've never read the book. So I can't tell you how accurate this is, but it's a Frankenstein story, and it's okay. What I thought was the better part of the book was the Ashikiri stories. And on the Ashikiri stories, like it said, it's a high school student, and his parents I think they might be teachers, but they have had to leave the town and go work elsewhere, and they've left him in their, now, I don't think teachers can afford mansions, but it's a legit mansion. It's a huge house. Got a big, like, a rock wall around it sort of a situation. And so the parents aren't there, but he's still going to school, and he's staying in the house. And weird things happen, like he'll hear noises and that kind of thing, kind of creepy stuff. But he's lived there all of his life or long enough time to where he's not letting it bother him too much. And so the first story is called Neck Specter. Neck as in the neck on your shoulder, that's connected for your shoulders to your head.
Like protect your neck.
Yeah, not Nick Specter, but Neck Specter. And so that story is a story about how he buried a body, and in his courtyard, this Ashikari did. He dug it. He buried a body, and then he decided that it wasn't deep enough, and so and it's a friend of his. He killed this friend of his, and he buried the body in this courtyard, and then it's just dirt back there. And so then he decides it's not deep enough, so he's going to dig the body up. And when he digs the body up, he realizes that the neck on the body is probably 2 feet long, right?
Normally long. I'm just saying.
Yeah, and so he goes to school, one of the girls that him and his best friend hang out with, she's like, "You're not even acting upset. Your best friend's missing." And he's like, "He's not missing." She's like, "Sure, he's missing. He hasn't been here in a while." She's like, "How can you not be upset that he's missing?" He's like, "He's not missing." And he says something like, kind of flippant, like, "What do you think, he's dead?" She goes, "I never said he was dead." And so Nate kind of threw out that this guy might be dead. And he's not acting too sad about it.
But he might be dead.
He's not acting too sad about it. So, so you got that going on, right? And you're like, well, you know, people around him, their necks kind of start stretching. And he sees things like at one point, like the school, like a teacher, somebody at school kind of gets onto him and calls him Ashikari. And he looks over there, and the guy's neck is stretching, and he's got like blood running out of his mouth, and then there's like a girl that's happening to a girl, and he's going kind of crazy, and he runs out of there, and like windows are opening on the side of the building of the classrooms, and people are sticking these long like giraffe necks out, and then when he goes home, he kind of hides under the covers, and then he looks out the window, and like the body of his friend, like there's an opening in the dirt, and the neck starts coming out of the dirt, like it's like a weed growing or something, and it's just, you know, kind of crazy things like that in this particular story, and then at one point, like somebody else that he's talking to at the house, their legs get really long, and what you find out is that body out back, its neck has grown up out of the ground, and it's stuck its head through the window, and it's kind of like looking at him through the house. At one point, the police show up, and they dig up the body, and the body of that person he buried has gotten super long, so long that the neck went under the wall, and it protruded on the other side of the wall by like the garbage bin, it started coming up. And so it's just a really weird story, and like there's a reporter there going, is this even possible? It's a modern mystery. And they're like, how many feet could this, how long could this be? I guess it's still growing, the head's under the wall, and it's really weird. And then there's a story about some spirits in this little lake area behind the school. And you find out there's these girls that are telling these guys, you know, kind of what to do. And these guys are jumping in the water. And the girls are, there's one guy that's real popular. And these girls are kind of like, want to be his girlfriend. Or they're following him around. And he's trying to get rid of them. So he falls in the water and fakes his own death. And that's going on in one of the stories. And that was a decent one. But where this really comes together is, and remember this Ashikari guy is in all the these stories, where it comes together is one of the stories he leaves his house, and it's called Pen Pal, and he leaves his house, and a couple friends at school are these people, he didn't really have any friends, but a couple of people at school, or at least he didn't have many friends, he killed one of his friends, there's a girl painting, he sees her painting, he goes by, he starts striking a conversation, she really didn't have much to do with him. But then later on, they find out that he lives in this big house. The girl, he kind of tries to befriend her, and eventually she kind of becomes his friend, and she kind of brings another guy in, they find out he lives in this big house, and so they want to go and check it out with him. And he says, "Oh well, you know, I've got these spirits or something there," and that really intrigues them. So they want to come check out the house. It's these kids from school. He says, "Well, my parents aren't there, and I live by myself there, and there's these noises, and they So that intrigues him. Like, we're going to go check out. Well, can we come? It's okay if we come to your house and check out your house.
He's like, no.
But he lets him come, you know. He's like, okay, well, you know, he's got nothing better going on.
It's on your own head.
And so at one point, they look out the window.
Yeah.
This is where this gets kind of weird. They look out the window into the courtyard. And you're thinking, well, that's where he's buried a body.
Right? Yeah.
And they see him out there digging. But he's there. They're looking down. And then that's when they realize, and he's always thought this house has a portal to another, like, dimension. It's his doppelganger that's killing people and burying them in his courtyard.
Oh, no.
And then leaving the bodies in his courtyard. So you read the first story about him doing this, and then this kid isn't the bad guy.
He's not the one doing
he
it.
He sees his evil doppelganger down there burying these bodies, and these two people with him see him down there, too. And
so, multiverse version of him.
Yeah, and so it's just kind of a weird deal. I thought this story with this kid and the house and the bodies and all that and how it's all kind of twisted and spirits and stuff, it really outshone the Frankenstein in my
opinion. Oh, yeah, well.
I mean, yeah, I know, the Frankenstein's an old story, what about?
Yeah.
But the Frankenstein's okay. But like I said, I really like the Ishikari stories, the original Junji Ito stories. He does a damn nice job of adapting or taking the Frankenstein and doing his own illustrations as he can do, his super artist. But the Ishitari stories with the crazy house, with the and the paranormal activity and the potential gateway to another dimension, it was pretty cool. And then the last little bit of the book, the last few pages, is the story about the family dog. And I guess they didn't have anywhere else to put it, so they had a few pages to kill.
Well, yeah.
So they put the family dog story in here.
Is it a horror story?
It's a story about...
Of course, it's a Junji Ito.
Well, it's Boss Non Non is the name of the dog. It's a little Maltese. And he's doing stories of when the dog was an elderly dog.
Okay.
And so... The family just kind of puts up with this dog. He's not like the nicest dog anymore. He growls at him and he barks at him and they threaten him with baths and stuff like that. But
one will.
But you know and he starts getting tumors on the side of his body and that kind of thing. But you know, in Japan, people sleep on mats on the floor, so the dog is kind of like sleeping up against him. And if Junji Ito goes upstairs to his studio, the dog may or may not come upstairs, or may or may not follow him, or he's down at the foot of the stairs kind of looking up or whatever. And then if he tries to give the dog some attention, the dog will walk off, but as soon as he walks off, the dog will follow him around. And just has these little stories about the dog. And at the very end, it shows like the dog had passed away. It shows a picture of what the dog's grave looks like out in his backyard. That says, the boss went to her eternal rest, cared for by her minion. The minion was Ito's mom. Okay. Ito's mom, and I don't know if his mom lives with him or not, but she's like an elderly lady, and she took care of the dog. And the dog, in the dog's mind, the elderly lady, Ito's mom, was her minion.
Because, yeah, brought me my food.
Right, so it says, the boss went to her eternal rest, cared for by her minion, in the bed at 10:20 p.m. on March the 5th, 1998. So now she's playing hide and seek in the ground in the backyard. So you know, you got a few pages of his dog stories, and you've got the what was his name, Ishikari stories, and then you got the Frankenstein. I thought this book, another solid book by Ito. I liked every bit of it. If you like horror stories and you're not reading Junji Ito, I have to question how much you like horror stories.
It is funny how this guy like came out of nowhere. I think. I mean, I don't know how long.
I think he's a superstar in Japan. Clearly.
Yeah. Clearly.
And then Viz is like, "Hey, we'll publish you, and we'll."
Yeah, I mean, obviously, we'll he starts selling, so they're bringing over years worth of his.
Yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, exactly. It's years and years worth of stuff. Usually, about two or three of these books come out a year. They're hardcovers. That one's about 400 pages.
God, and a lot of work.
And
they're stuff.
They're translating them into English, and they're just. You know, like every 4 months or so, 4 or 5 months, there's a new one come out. And I think they're just one after the other, really good stuff. So, and his artwork is creepy. It's very detailed. And he comes up with the weirdest shit on stuff. I think it's just awesome. Probably my favorite horror guy going by far. I mean, I like some Hellboy, but this is a completely different level.
Yeah, it's a different kind of thing. I mean, Hellboy, by comparison, is like a superhero comic. I mean,
yeah, really. Yeah, by comparison, you're right. Although there is witches and there's all that in it, but it's not the same.
But it's not.
This is like body horror and creepy shit, and that's more...
Yeah, it's like David Cronenberg stuff.
Yeah, so... yeah, read the Ito. It's kick-ass. Anyway, I on the podcast, did I tell you about the Iron Claw?
No.
I didn't?
No.
I haven't told you about the Iron Claw?
No, I don't think
I
so.
I told you I saw that, right?
I don't think I knew that you saw that.
Okay. I thought I might have mentioned it. We saw the Iron Claw, and I'll just... A little bit. I thought it was pretty good, but how many Von Erichs were there? Not counting
the
dad.
I just saw the thing... Eric, let's see, David.
Not the oldest. He's third.
Oh, he's third?
Third.
I thought he was ill. Oh,
there's the
Kevin.
That's second. There's a kid that died when he was four. He was Kevin's older brother.
Oh, I didn't know about
that. The only one that knew him was Kevin because the other ones weren't born yet.
Okay, I didn't know about that.
Yeah, there's a kid that died when he was four.
So okay, so him.
Yeah, the Kevin.
Kevin.
David.
David. Carrie.
Carrie's the fourth one.
What was Corky's name?
Oh, there's Mike.
Mike.
Now, wasn't there one younger than Mike? I know there was.
Maybe there was. No, and then they brought in somebody as like a cousin.
Yeah.
Was never a real relative.
Right, right.
He got drummed out pretty quick.
I think there was a kid younger than Mike. Because
I just watched a thing about world-class wrestling, and they talked about some of that.
So, Mike... Real, I won't tell you the whole story.
Mike was never going to make it in wrestling.
No. Mike...
Because they pushed him into
it,
kind
of. They pushed Mike into it when David died.
Yeah.
Mike, although Fritz, he was a hard ass, but he's also very smart.
Yeah.
Fritz was a heel when he in his day.
Right. He was a German, man.
Well, his grandma or great grandma's maiden name was Von Erich.
Right, but he played up the German.
He
thing.
Wasn't Von Erich, but his grandma or great grandma was Von Erich.
Yeah, something else.
And so his name was Atkinson.
That's
and
right.
So he took the Von Erich name as his stage name.
Right, and he was like,
and he invented the Iron Claw or utilized it or made it better than what it was before, whatever. But and he was like a bad guy. But he was like a big, wiry muscle guy.
Yeah.
Like, not like guys nowadays that are all roided out, but he was like a legitimate big guy, and he's pretty much muscular.
Yeah.
Way more muscular than like Ric Nice. Flair or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
But he's a bad guy, and then he has these kids, and then the kids, he grooms them to be wrestlers and to be good guys, to be heroes or whatever. And he's got a plot of land or whatever, or eventually gets a plot of land, and he has a big garage, and the one part of the garage is all like a workout facility, and they're all pumping iron and stuff. And so in the movie, Carrie's not going to be a wrestler either. It's Kevin and David.
Oh, really?
Are the wrestlers.
That's now, funny.
Well, remember, Carrie was a discus thrower in high school.
Oh, that's right, because he did that discus punch.
And he was, he did, and he was, and he was track and field.
Yeah.
And he was going to go to the Olympics until Carter pulled the plug on him.
Oh, in 1980 or whatever year it was?
Yeah, I think it was 80. It was right before Reagan.
Yeah, moving before Reagan.
Yeah, because Reagan was like in November when he got elected. This would have been the summer games. So yeah, it was right before then. And he was going to go to the Olympics. He was an Olympic athlete and was probably going to go. And then when Carter pulled the plug, he got on the bus from wherever he was training at. And he drove and he bussed himself back to
Texas.
Denton or wherever they lived at. Lake Dallas or whatever.
Lake Dallas, yeah.
But, so he wasn't a wrestler. He'd maybe wrestled in high school, but wasn't like going to be professional. But the other two were. And Fritz was really high on Kevin to get his shot at the championship because Fritz always got kind of ripped out of the championship.
Oh, yeah.
And because he's a bad guy and other things working against him. But now that Fritz has got his own territory, it's affiliated with the NWA. It's not
right.
It's not NWA, but it's affiliated. And so every once in a while, a champion would come through there and do a little tour through there. And he was wanting Kevin to be the next big thing, which Kevin was lined up to be the next big thing. Well, anyway, Mike, at this point, was still in high school, and his love was music, which I didn't know this. And, and I'm assuming this is completely legit. Because it said, it didn't say based on a true story, it said something about, I forgot how it was worded. It didn't say factual. It just said, you know, the way they stated it made you think, well, some of this stuff might be composites of this or that.
Yeah.
But anyway, so but they played up that Kevin was into music, and Kevin was in a band, or Mike. Mike was in a band, like a garage band.
Oh, yeah.
And he was playing guitar and singing, and there was like a drummer and like maybe a bass player. And so his deal was going to be in music, and his little band was going to get some gigs at like some honky-tonk type stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And the mom was really religious, and she's like, well, you can't go play at clubs. You're not 21, and you're still in high school. I forbid it or whatever.
Yeah.
And so that was his thing. Well, when David went off to Japan, and he had the Kevin got married, and at the wedding, they had this big wedding party, and they were all there. And David went to the bathroom and threw up blood because he'd gotten this injury in his gut.
Hell
and
yeah.
He basically got a tear in his small intestine.
Mm.
And he was getting ready to go to take this tour to Japan because his dad was really pushing for it, because if he goes and does well in Japan, it'd give him a avenue into being a contender for the heavyweight championship.
Because
he was going to go feud with like Flair and some other
heavies.
Yeah. On this Japan tour, and he didn't want to miss it, so he never told anybody he had this problem, and he threw up blood, and Kevin caught him in the bathroom and said, man, you got to go to the doctor. He's like, no, I'm leaving for Japan. I can't do that. Well, he gets over there, and I think he was still wearing his street clothes, and he checks into his hotel room, and he lays in the bed and dies there in the hotel room. And other people said he was on drugs, which he was on drugs probably. They kind of say he might have been. But legitimately, they said his stomach blew up or whatever.
I just read something about that where they were talking about, it's definitely, you know.
So you had that.
He had drugs in his system maybe, but that wasn't what caused his
death. Before that happened, since Kerry was shot, the whole Olympic thing went down the tubes, Fritz, they're out there, basically they're out there mending fences. Like they got the post hole diggers.
Oh, yeah.
And they're out of the farm. All the boys are, because they all still live at home. It's pre-Kevin getting married. And they're digging these post holes, and they're putting up barbed wire because they got some horses or whatever. And Fritz just goes, well, Kerry, since you're not going to go to the Olympics, you need to be a wrestler. And Kerry's like, okay, Dad, I guess I'll do it. I mean, it's like whatever he wanted, the boys were just hot to it, you know.
Yeah.
I'll do it, sure, Dad. You want to go?
It's like Michael Jackson's dad.
Yeah, maybe he might not have been beating him, but yeah, I mean, this kind of you know, they're so gung ho about whatever he tells them, they're just like yes men. It's okay, I guess I could do that, you know. And so that's how they become a 6-man tag team against the Freebirds.
Oh, because
there's three of them, and that got to be huge.
Oh, yeah.
And that put them all like on the map. And I didn't know that, and I watched a crap ton of WCW World Class Wrestling, right? Or World Class.
I thought it was World Class Championship Wrestling.
Maybe, WCCW maybe?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, out of the Sportatorium.
Yeah.
I watched that all the time. I loved it.
Oh, yeah.
Here's what I didn't know, though. Did you know it was so big, so popular, because the Von Erichs and the Freebirds, all that business,
a big feud,
that ESPN had a deal with them and was showing that shit around the world?
No, I didn't know that.
No, I didn't know that either. No. It was bigger than any NWA.
Oh, really?
Yeah, bigger than WWF wasn't that big back then.
Yeah,
it was mainly just, they were regional. It was regional, and that was mainly all New York stuff. But it was so big and so popular, they were pumping that out around the world. And so that's how he got to go to Japan, because people had already known kind of what he was.
Oh, I see.
And so, when he died, unexpectedly, Kevin comes home, and the dad's all upset, and he goes, what happened? He goes, David died. He's in Japan. He died. And, you know, that was a big shock to the whole family. The mom's, you know, crazy, because, you know, her son died. And, well, then they go, we need another wrestler. Mike, you need to be a wrestler. Well, the problem with Mike is
he wouldn't. He had the genetics.
Kerry, have you seen a picture of Kerry standing next to Arnold Schwarzenegger?
No, but he's about as big as Arnold, I would think.
There's a picture.
He was huge.
That at one point, Schwarzenegger was in Dallas for some reason, and somehow Cary Von Erich met him.
Yeah.
I think Cary Von Erich might be bigger than Schwarzenegger at his peak. He was like literally a modern-day Adonis.
Oh, yeah. He was a big...
He just had muscle after muscle, and, you know, some might be steroids, but he also lifted a lot of weights, clearly.
Yeah.
So you got him and you got Kevin, and Kevin... The movie's got a couple problems. One is the guy they got playing Kevin is Zac Efron, which I don't care one thing about him, but he must have been lifting weights for 5 years because he looks bigger than Kevin did.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But meanwhile, the guy playing Carrie looks way smaller than he should. He should look the most physical specimen.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And he doesn't, though. Kevin, no. The guy playing Kevin looks bigger than Carrie. And then the guy that got playing David is nice and tall. Literally.
David was pretty tall.
Yeah, I think he was like 6'5 or more. Yeah. And the rest of them are about 6 foot. He's like legitimately almost a head taller than the rest of them. And then the guy that got playing Mike is about a head taller than the rest of them.
Oh, and he was not that big.
No. Mike was like a shrimp compared to those guys. And he wasn't muscular. And that makes sense because he was into music. But so they got this kind of a big guy as Mike. And I'm like, what kind of casting is this? And at first, he's singing the songs, and the girls...
he was black.
He's singing the songs, and the girls are liking him, and then all of a sudden, he's in wrestling. Here's the problem, though. He didn't have all that background of wrestling.
Right.
And so, at one point, they're doing this tag team thing, or whatever.
Yeah.
And he does... And, you know, they're all... You know how they all would line up, and they all do the triple drop kick at the same time?
Oh, yeah.
At one time, they did, like, a double or a triple, and when Mike landed wrong... And he broke his collarbone
because
he landed on his shoulder wrong or whatever. Yeah. And it broke. And he's writhing around on the floor like in pain. They had to stop the match, get him out of there. He goes to the hospital. They do the surgery. He gets toxic shock syndrome, which usually women get it. But anybody can really get it. It's mainly a woman thing, though. But he gets that. It about kills him.
Yeah.
He loses a lot of weight because of it. And it kind of affects him mentally. Like, I think, at one point in the movie, they say his temperature got up to 107 for, like, over an hour.
Mm.
And so that's like cooking. They couldn't get his temperature down. So he's not the same after that. And if you remember, in real life, David had already died. But Mike went out, took his backpack, went out on their property out across the way, and, shot himself. Or I think he did a drug overdose. Well, then Carrie gets a gun and shoots himself on the property.
Mm.
And then I was positive there was another...
And Carrie was in a car accident, wasn't he?
No. Well, I wasn't going to bring this up, but what he was is he's in a motorcycle accident. After he won the championship, the world championship, after he won the world championship in Dallas, he beat Ric Flair. That night, he was drinking. He was celebrating. And Kevin had already gotten married at this point, so he wasn't living there anymore. But Kevin dropped by to see him or whatnot. He congratulated him. The parents already went to sleep. And Kevin's in the kitchen, like, drinking some beers. Carrie. And Carrie tells him, I'm going to go out ride my... He rode a motorcycle everywhere. He says, I'm going to go out ride my motorcycle. And Kevin's like, you know, you've been drinking. You have to be careful. Oh, no, I'm going to be fine. Well, what happens is now, I always heard that he lost part of his foot.
Yeah, I think it was more than part of it.
No, it was more than part of it. Like, up to here.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He lost between his ankle and his knee down. And so...
Well, that's good. Up would be worse.
So they had to amputate all that.
Yeah.
So what he would do was...
Nobody knew.
Now, I had heard that he just had... I thought he had some toes missing.
Right.
He just had like a wooden block in his shoe. But no, he had this like fake leg inside this boot. Because they all wore those like high wrestling
except
boots.
Kevin.
He was barefoot.
Kevin wrestled barefoot.
Yeah. But they all wear those high boots.
Yeah.
So he would, like, lace that high boot onto his stump and kind of half-ass wrestle with this stump leg, which I didn't know was that bad.
Yeah.
So he was never the same after that. And he drunk a lot and whatever. So Mike killed himself. Carrie killed himself. David had already died. And then I'm almost positive this kid was not mentioned in the movie at all. Oh, the older brother had already died, little kid.
Yeah.
But I'm almost positive there's a younger kid.
I was thinking there was.
Younger than Mike that looked up to Mike. And I'm pretty sure when Mike killed himself, that kid killed himself a little bit later. I need to Wikipedia that and look that up, but I'm pretty sure there was another one that they didn't even talk about.
I saw that Behind the Ring.
They didn't even talk about
Curse of the Von Erichs.
They didn't even talk about him in the movie at all. Well, whenever when Kevin got married, he eventually had a kid, and he would not name his kid Von Erich. He named him Atkinson or Addison or whatever, and didn't want to have his kid to do anything with wrestling. In fact, the dad pretty much gave him the world-class wrestling, and he sold it to like WWE or whatever. And then he took his family and he moved to Hawaii, and he was living in Hawaii until he just came back like a year ago or so. He hadn't been back to Dallas in like 20 years or something, but he's got this huge family now himself. So he kind of, I guess he kind of broke the curse of the Von Erichs or whatever. But anyway, the movie is pretty decent.
Yeah, I'd like to watch it.
There's more to it than what I told you to. That's kind of that's kind of the highlights. But it's a pretty decent movie. But I can't believe I'm almost positive they dropped a whole kid off.
Yeah, they did. It's Chris Von Erich.
Well, it really was Chris.
But they brought in at one point they brought in a cousin.
So what? So Chris died. Killed himself, right?
Yeah, Chris died of suicide. So here's the.
Does it have does it have the ages?
Jack died at the age of 6.
Electrocuted.
Electrocuted after stepping on a trailer tongue.
How would that electrocute you?
A trailer tongue? Well, it was probably grounded or something. The trailer tongue was. Stepped on a trailer tongue, was electrically shocked and fell face into the melting snow puddle, face first in the melting snow, and drowned. So it didn't get electrocuted, drowned.
Well, it knocked him out or something.
Right, right.
What the hell? What a bad little situation that is.
Kevin Von Erich.
Still alive.
Still alive.
Does it have that? What was Jack's like date of birth and date? Does it have when he died?
I'm kind of wondering. He was born on September 21st, 1952. March
52. 7th,
1959.
Okay.
So Kevin would have been. Kevin Von Erich.
57 or something, maybe?
Wait, Kevin now?
No, when he was born.
Oh, yeah, 57.
Yeah.
Born 57. Obviously, so David Von Erich was in 58, born in 58. Died in he was married in 78.
Who was?
David. He died in 1984. He was married in 78.
So I didn't know David was married. Wow. Okay.
Oh, wait. Hang on. He was married. He got divorced in 79. He married again in 82, and he was married when he died.
I did not know this. That whole part's cut out of the movie then.
Yeah. Well, I mean, a lot of kids.
Yeah.
Kerry Von Erich was born in 1960.
Okay.
He was married in 83.
What the hell?
But he was divorced in 92 and shot himself in 93.
Oh. So what about Mike?
Oh, there's a marker placed on the spot where he shot himself.
What, on the family farm?
Yeah.
It's about down by the tree. Right by the tree.
His dad put an angel, concrete angel, apparently down there. Mike Von Erich. Mike is the fifth son. He was... Okay, so Kerry was the modern-day warrior. Mike was the inspirational warrior.
Well, the thing about Mike was... Mike was playing music because he's into rock music. And he played Rush.
Oh, yeah.
And he's playing Tom Sawyer.
Yeah.
Really loud in the house when the parents weren't there. Kerry's out in the garage working out like a beast because that's what he did. And he heard that, yeah. And that became his theme song because he liked it so much. That's supposedly how he got to. Okay, so what was Mike's birthdays there?
Mike was born in 64.
Yeah.
After his wedding. And he was married.
What the hell?
After his wedding, he injured his shoulder on a tour of Israel. Got toxic syndrome. Took a fatal dose of tranquilizers in 1987.
And he was born in what year again?
64.
To 87, it's like 23 or something.
Something like that. Chris Von Erich. With his short stature, asthma, and extremely brittle bones, which are prone to breaking, Chris was never able to achieve the success that his father and brothers achieved.
Dude, don't get in the ring, Karen.
He got brittle.
Was he quirky?
After several years of not being able to succeed in the wrestling business, Chris became depressed and frustrated. At the age of 21, he shot himself in the head.
What year was that? What year was he born? What year did he?
91, so he's born in 69.
Wow. And the first kid was born in 52 or something.
Something like that.
Wow. Yeah, it's a big spread of kids is what that is. Yeah, they totally just washed over those weddings, washed over Chris like he didn't exist. It's too bad they did all that. I know they want to focus on a story.
Oh, fictional relatives. Waldo Von Erich.
Waldo.
Stage name of professional.
Did you say Waldo?
Canadian professional wrestler Walter Sidney. Billed as the brother Fritz when they. Oh, he was billed as the brother Fritz. They're not related.
No doubt.
Lance was the one I was thinking of.
Yeah,
he was the fake one.
Yeah.
No bylaw. He was billed as the son of Waldo. So he was the cousin, and then Rip Von Erich.
It's like Rip Van Winkle.
Golly. Lined us up. He called him and played him.
Wasn't Gentleman Chris Adams like a friend
of family? Mark Von Erich. Well, he feuded with him, and then they tag teamed him and Kerry and him and Kevin, I think. The Von Erich family was inducted in the WWE Hall of Fame. They were inducted by longtime Von Erich rival Michael P.S. Hayes.
P.S. is right, man.
Pretty sexy. That's what he called himself. Oh, there's a family tree on Wikipedia.
So P.S. Hayes inducted him, huh?
Yeah.
I guess he buried the hatchet.
Yeah.
Well, none of his guys are around anymore either.
Yeah.
Oh, the guy that got playing Terry Gordy is terrible.
Oh, yeah.
P.S. Hayes doesn't look bad, but the Terry Gordy guy is awful. And the Buddy Roberts guy, it's the Buddy Roberts when he had the wig and the rest of
it. Oh, yeah. Nice.
And let's see, who else? Oh, the guy that got playing Ric Flair is awful. Just
nobody can play Ric Flair for Ric Flair.
This guy.
Woo!
This guy is, I mean, he is so bad. I'll tell you the best casting, though, is the guy that got playing Fritz.
Oh, yeah.
Looks a lot like Fritz. Very good cast. The guy that plays David's not bad. They got Kerry and Kevin totally fucked up. Mike is, like, tall. He's like, why is Mike so damn tall? Who else
Who's
is in
playing
there?
Lance? That's what I'm
Lance. No fucking Lance. What the movie needs,
I'm
though.
I'm the third cousin of the Von Erichs.
Here's what the movie needs, though.
What?
If I made that movie, I would 100% put this in. This would help, like, people who aren't maybe dug in on the Von Erichs.
War cage matches.
No. Oh. Like, there'll be time hops. It should have said, like, 13 years later.
You don't get that.
And then also, on some of these guys, it ought to have down below, like, who their name is. Like, people might not know it's Ric Flair because they never called him Ric Flair.
Oh, yeah,
And then who was the announcer back then, like Roy Mercer or something like that?
I think so.
You know, the announcer guy, they should have had his name on the bottom. What they did have, they had the Sportatorium. Have you ever drove by the Sportatorium?
No, but I've heard it's pretty dinky.
Well, they tore it down. But one time me and Chris went through that part of Dallas, and it's in Shitholesville, and we just drove by it and we go, holy shit, that's the Sportatorium.
I think Fritz owned it, by the way.
Probably did. And it looked like some ice skating rink from like the 40s.
Yeah.
It looked terrible.
I just watched that.
But they've since moved it down.
Behind the ring or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And it had footage of the Sportatorium. And I think it said that Fritz owned it. And he got it as part of when he bought the territory or something like that. Or maybe he's used, I forget. But I think he owned it.
The very first of the movie, if I remember correctly, is in black and white because it's like past history. It's like Fritz. It's Fritz and his wife and like they got like one or two kids and they're in a like a station wagon and he does a match and then he takes a shower and he comes out and gets in the car with his wife and kids and he tells her that he's wanting to
buy the territory.
Get territory or do something to where his family's going to have more money and whatever.
Makes sense.
And then it goes into the color part. I think that was in black and white. And then it goes into the color part of it.
Baby, I'm going to start a dynasty.
We're going to keep pumping these kids. That's like the Williams dad, Venus and Serena Williams.
Oh, yeah.
Because you know, he had two or three daughters. And then he hears about how much tennis players can make. And he told his wife, Orsine. He says, Orsine, we're going to have a couple more daughters, and I'm going to make them tennis champs or whatever. And they had a couple more daughters, and he, in the meantime, I don't think he knew much about tennis, but he learned tennis, and he taught them tennis, and, I mean, he had a dream.
Yeah, I mean.
I mean, it worked out for him, and it worked out for Fritz, I guess.
Worked out for
Fritz's big deal was
worked out for Venus and
Serena. Yeah, Fritz's big deal was he felt like he always got ripped
off. Not so much Carey or David or
Lance. I mean, they were popular though.
They were super popular.
And the whole deal with Fritz was his Fritz deal was he felt like he never got his shot. He wanted one of his sons to get the shot, yeah. And it was going to be Kevin. And because of some stuff that happened in the movie or maybe real life, Kevin's shot got passed over because he, what he did, and so then David gets the shot, and there's one funny scene. They're at the dining room table at home, and like the dad's at one end, the mom's like passing out food or whatever, and she's always making food.
The dining table had to be this big.
Yeah, she's always making food for the whole clan or whatever, and then like I think Carrie comes home or whatever, and Fritz is giving the speech, and he's like, well, boys, right now, Kevin's my number one favorite son. And he goes, then it's David, then it's Carey.
Oh, man, he's ranking the kids.
And then it's you, Mike. But he goes, but there's always room for improvement, and you can move up. He's basically going to tell him, Mike. It's the funniest speech ever, man.
Thanks, Dad.
But you could always move up.
You can move up.
But he's telling him the rankings of his favorite. And it's so funny. It's like, what the hell?
That's what you should do if you're a parent.
Exactly.
You need to do that with your sons.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyways, I'm not trying to spoil the movie for you, but you'll probably
kind of know the story. Yeah, exactly. Most of it surprised me.
Right. Nah. But, I thought it's entertaining. You can check it out. Iron Claw. By now, it ought to be almost ready for streaming service.
Yeah, who knows what it'll end up on.
Yeah. If it ends up over here, you don't have it, you can come over here and I'll watch it again.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, so with that, let's wrap this episode up right here. As always, I'm your host, Dale Nelson, joined by my other host,
Scott Sackett.
Yeah, come back next week for another all-new episode. Check out our blog at betterthanfictionthepodcast.blogspot.com, where I will post some photos of what we talked about tonight.
And if you enjoy the podcast, please take a second to leave a review and subscribe on your favorite podcast app. That will help other people find the podcast.
We have a sponsor?
Oh, yes, we have a sponsor. Sorry, Jim Bob. We have a sponsor. If you're in the panhandle of Florida, specifically in Pensacola, Florida, swing by Area 51 Comics and Toys and check it out. Tell Jim Bob we finally remember to talk about him.
That's right. And with that, we're going to say, hey, come back next week. We're out of here. Bye-bye.